In der letzten Folge.
He's from Vienna, from Austria. A very warm welcome as well to Ilya Radgruber.
Many people ask me, why do I not practice as a doctor anymore? Why do I work with AI and develop solutions? And the short answer I can give now, the long answer I can give throughout the podcast, but the short answer is, when I was in medical school, I discovered how much I have to learn. It was overwhelming, and I realized even if you go afterwards, after finishing university, into the practice, the learning doesn't stop. As exciting as it sounds, if you write something like a discharge letter, you want to define the diagnosis, you still work with the old ICD-10 system. And this is something that the Fraunhofer Institute is also developing something with AI to automate this process. And this is also a very promising area, which I think will be also in the German-speaking area will be very popular. And many companies are already going on the topic.
Yeah, Ilya, we have spoken lots about documentation, discharge letters, and how AI can support in this field. Like in the introduction, you already mentioned that basically that knowledge in medicine when it comes to the publication of papers, for example, is exploding at an unprecedented rate. Yeah, this raises the question to me of how they can find nowadays the necessary time when it remains as limited as ever, yeah? And we now, as you said, all the AI tools are not in use already, so doctors have to do all their diagnosis work, the treatment work, at the moment without, like, AI support. How can, in turn, AI support when it comes, like, to research paper and reduce the reading time, maybe wrap up certain papers or kind of curate like content that it's easier for them to digest all the knowledge?
Yep. Excellent question. And I was just to give the importance, to highlight the importance of this topic is, I mentioned a number at the beginning. There's a second very important number exists there from Nature, one of the most important scientific journals. There was a paper released 2020, and it measured how long does it take till the all available medical knowledge in the world doubles. I just give 3 seconds for every listener to think about it. How long does it take till all the medical knowledge doubles? We're not talking about years, not about months. We're talking about 74 days. And this was 4 years ago, 2020, which means it's likely even less now. And when I present this to doctors and confront them with the number, I usually get two kinds of responses. And these are two mechanisms, how do people respond and cope with the knowledge. Many of them say, it's the first group, that most of the publications, they're not relevant. They focus on subtopic areas, which is not relevant for my field. That's why I don't fear it. It's even not relevant. It's not relevant as statistic. And the other group of people say, that's correct. And it's still, I have no time to read what I still don't know. And now the new knowledge is coming. And this is really a pressing problem. I don't know how to approach it. And this is...
Yeah. So the thing is, you really can't keep up with all the knowledge like coming.
And even the system's not ready for it. But there are many hospitals where their chief doctor asks them, what was the blood value XYZ of this patient 3 days ago? They have to remember the value. And this is something, why should I remember? They can look it up because I can't remember every value. We're talking about you don't even find enough time to learn this stuff. And what does mean learn this stuff? When does a doctor, physician decides on when he evaluates, I need more time to learn something? Usually you're in practice, you have a patient, for example, for epilepsy. And epilepsy, you're fluent, you're no neurologist, you maybe know something about it, but not that enough. And you come home, you're exhausted, you're tired, and you start looking, oh, where do I find a book on that? Usually now with the internet, much easier. But still, what's the most relevant book? What are there? What societies recommend? What and what on that? And all the time till you find the right source, and you read till you, and then you have to read it, you have to understand it, and then you have to find a way to how to apply it, and then how to remember when you're applying it. So knowledge has a doctor's work is a knowledge work, and every knowledge work consists of three layers, which means creation, application, and distribution, which means you need to distribute also the knowledge. And I think this is what would be an area which would be more easy to find an AI use case. Like if you want to make the work more easy for the doctor to not spend so much time on researching the knowledge and applying it, you have like a database, and then the doctor can chat like from ChatGPT, and then they get answers. But if you connect it with graph networks like knowledge graphs, then you know the source, and you have the explanation why it is recommended, and you can focus more. It doesn't depend if you choose the knowledge graph approach or something else. You have to tackle the need, which means find the use cases where the doctors need to learn more or better, and then find solutions how they can learn use case specific.
Yeah, you now described the scenario. Are there already now tools or applications which can support doctors in this direction? Or is it just a future scenario you're just talking about?
That's also a really relevant question. And in fact, there are already companies who focus on that. Specifically, if you look at scientific papers, because when we talk about papers, like summarizing papers, only reading the abstract is not enough. But there are already many competitors, startups, also big corporates who are attacking this market. And this is a good application area. But still, you have several sources, because as a doctor, you like to read from this book, type of books more. You like to read from society recommendations. There are also like companies who summarize the recommendations of the different societies, develop tools for that. I don't want to name drop any company, because there are good players on the market, and I don't want to highlight anyone, but there are interesting solutions.
But there are medical specific
yes.
solutions on the market.
Yes.
I think this is a quite, yeah, this yes. is a difference, for example, as we talked about the discharge letter tool, for example.
Yes.
There we obviously
yes.
have the problem that we don't have applications so far, like reliable applications. But in this context, at this scenario, you really have players on the market which can support, like doctors, medical doctors.
Absolutely. Many of them have been existent even before the age of the hype wave of AI, and now they start to use AI. And many just came since the AI adoption started to explode. Then they came to the market. But yes, there are already tools that people can use, and many famous ones which doctors really know. For example, UpToDate, many people know it's like gives a summary of how to treat a specific patient. They use AI for that. Then you have to learn less. There are different tools available. Yeah,
yeah. I would, Ilya, thank you. I would like to finish our talk today with a question which AI Campus already, is involved in. And I think it's closely connected to what we just talked about when it comes to knowledge acquisition, and something we already talked in the beginning about. As we talked about, the more or the deeper you are getting into AI, the less fear you have of applying it. Yeah. And then there the question is, because it's closely connected that to the thing we just have, is that basically, like, doctors, they have to know so much, that we all know that medical study programs, it doesn't matter if it's in Austria, in Germany, and all over the world, I think it's really like the one of the most intense study programs at universities, at higher education institutions, and they have to learn so much. How can we put the pressure on, like, students for example medical study programs and say, now you also have to learn things about AI as well? Where can this be additionally put on, that they learn this? And is there something out of your perspective where you have to say, okay, we have to let go, there are some other things, like I don't know, students don't have to learn because they have to get deeper into the field of AI?
I totally get your question. And it sounds like a bit contradictory. On the one side, I say there's so much time you have to invest to learn the medical stuff. And at the same time, I say, oh, you also have to learn the AI stuff. So I totally get this. And I see three ways or three perspectives how this can be facilitated. First of all, starting in medical school, you have to give some basic knowledge, to shift resources and learning to just to understand, give the ability for the students to see behind AI algorithm, to not let the black box of the AI decision be as it is, just to understand the basics. And also, it's even true for general school, not only for medical school, that you start to apply AI during your study. So that's why you're also familiar. It's like, also in the computer age, if you are growing up in this, have no computer in school, and then you go to work in the work life, and then you start to first use the computer, of course it would be more beneficial if you have already be familiar how to use a computer in school, back in school. So it's like the first perspective. Second perspective would also be that the awareness and work environment, which mostly means hospitals, that the understanding is there, that the doctor is not the knowledge machine, which has to know everything, because it's not possible. The awareness is not here, and this is a problem. And this is why, if you are not aware of it, you are starting to neglect this problem, and then this is something which puts additional pressure on the doctors. Even especially when the older generation which says, yeah, we learned it this way, and you have to learn it also this way, and you have to keep up like I did. Then it depends, not all older generations, but some older generations that persist, that the younger generations learn like they learned. So we need more awareness, that we need a different approach, which means that the doctor is not a knowledge machine. It's more like becoming more like a consultant. Like you're guiding the patient into the process.
That's a really, really interesting point. So what you just described was that basically that it needs a change in the entire society, how we see the profession of the things, what a doctor is doing, that basically he has maybe in future multiple AI agents supporting them in different fields regarding diagnosis, regarding documentation, and all these things, and accept this, that he's not basically the half god in white, who is basically like pretty close to how God acts.
Of course. This needs to be understood better. This needs to be everyone in the organization. Also, we as patients can do also a lot, as the patient is not the patient anymore who has no knowledge about his specific disease or does know how to cope with it. Of course, the doctor has the is more experienced and has to help the patient, but still it plays a crucial role. If the patient, the compliance or adherence is available, as it makes a difference if the patient invests time and knows what he has to do to improve his outcome or to the therapy process. As the more he knows or she knows, the better the outcome. But to achieve that, this is something maybe to start from the beginning. How does the process starts? If you have AI, like, I don't know, symptom checkers or something like what the patient can inform themselves, then they are informed. They work better with the doctor, and this also makes the work of the doctor more easy. As if you have prepared patients, and this will also reduce the burdens, the feeling of overwhelming, coping with learning medicine and learning AI. If the patient is working with the doctor and not doctor works on the patient, it makes things more easy.
Mm. So the thing really is, just to summarize what you just described, and I hope I'm putting it right, that you basically have the doctor and there are maybe several different agents supporting, like, the doctor and the patients. But in the end, and this is most probably the most important thing, is that the doctor is staying in charge when it's about, like, taking the final decision, for example, when it comes to treatment.
Of course. And as much as we talk about AI, still there will be no AI which will be responsible for any treatment, for any diagnosis. At the end of the day, still the doctor who treats the patient has the responsibility. And that's why we have more safety reliance and more focus on that than in any other industry, because here every mistake can be severe, and that's why it's also important that the doctor understands the basic of it. If you, like, say, if your doctor thinks sees it's a black box and you don't understand why does the system, this AI agent or tool or anything else, recommends this diagnosis in this particular case, if you don't understand as a doctor why it is the case, then you're in the trouble, because then you can also get something like over reliance bias, which means you just copy paste every decision. You start to switch off your brain. This cannot be a problem. Or also, and that's why open source is more relevant and interesting. If you work with open source AI, then you can, if you want to understand why was it decided like this, where you can look into an algorithm. If the provider gives the possibility, then you know why this specific diagnosis was made. And I think a good citation on this topic is the CIO of the Mayo Clinic, Chris Ross, said about AI: be curious, be enthusiastic, but be careful. And this is something I think is, and this AI agent diagnosis for the patient and for the doctor is a relevant one.
But this is basically a pretty interesting interesting thing, because we also have this, for example, in the guidelines from the World Health Organization regarding the usage or the application of large language models. There, I think, is one of the main points is the autonomy of the doctor when it comes to decision making while using a large language model. But the interesting thing is what you just described is, if you're using the tool or the application and it already gives you, like, some sort of diagnosis, or if it gives you some sort of maybe, like, possible treatment, you already see the answer of the system. And how can you say, I mean, you are, I would say that's human, that you are in some sort of way being, like, kind of influenced by this, what you are reading or what you are hearing. So how can this be completely, I don't know, getting out of your mind or being erased by your mind? I think that's a challenge, but there we would need another episode, I think, to discuss this. I would like to finish with one last question regarding medical education, because this is something which is being discussed at so many conferences when we are talking about with doctors at universities and like institutions using AI campus. It's always the question about how deep AI knowledge should go in medical education. And it's always the question, or quite often leads to the question, code literacy, coding or not? Like, should medical students learn how to code? Or would you say that goes far too deep? It's all about application. It's all about ethical implication. What is your perspective on this?
To give maybe a precise answer on that, coding, definitely not. Coding is something which a job which AI itself can do very well. But something like solution architecture, which means that you know the basic components, what is the technical workflow, if you input this into the chat box, what is happening behind, and how is the answer generated? On this basic level, and this is something which the AI field is evolving in this generative AI, but also for other AI areas. But this is something which can be taught. This is something which doctors, physicians can inform themselves just to understand the basic architecture. This is the first, so no coding, but basic architecture. And of course, what you said, ethical use, or the topic of morality and ethic itself is a relevant one. There are a lot of questions that will arise the deeper you dive in, as you don't have 100% exact answers. It's not like AI is not designed to give you an ultimate answer to everything. And how do you cope then with as a doctor, if you say it's a 96% specificity or sensitivity, or doctors tell. And if you are, this is something we are taught in medical school already. What is sensitivity? What is specificity? But still you are the end user who has the decision to make. And now you have like a colleague who has also his knowledge, and you don't know what your colleague knows, but you have to rely yourself and possibly also your life, because you've made a wrong decision. This could something harm the patient. This can also harm then your life in a legal perspective. So you rely your life. So that's why this ethic example, and ethic as a general is the second big important topic which doctors, physicians, medical staff is to learn.
So I think you really put it quite nicely, as you said. I mean, it's kind of an agent or like a colleague, where it's absolutely necessary that you know the limitations of basically the answer this technical or technological colleague is giving you. But I think that's quite a challenge, yeah, because it can give you the right answers in 99 of 100 times, and then you are trusting this colleague, so to say, and then suddenly there is this one wrong answer, basically, which can really lead to complication and of course in medical contexts, even to death.
Absolutely. And the thing is that whether you use AI or not, this is something which happens to you as a person as well. Everybody makes wrong decisions. And one remarkable quote when I was a young student, a doctor said, it was in a board meeting in the morning with several doctors, senior doctors, and they said, and you know, everybody has mistakes which led to death. This is something which is happening, yeah? And which means if you have the AI or not, it happened before the use of AI, you also made wrong decisions. But now, the big difference is now that you split your decision between what you are capable of and what AI is capable of. And you have it has to be a teammate. You have to know what is he or she the AI capable of or not. And And I believe that this enhancement, this machine augmentation of the human will lead to much better patient outcome. This is something we have to point out. This is something it's important not to forget. And probably a good example is also autonomous cars, autonomous driving. It will possibly reduce the accident rate, but still, if something goes wrong, everywhere in the media you will read, oh, this autonomous car caused an accident and people died. And this would also likely happen in healthcare. If you have a system and somebody will die of it because you relied on AI, this will have huge implications. And this is something we as a society don't know, or as a regulation, or how the companies work, don't know how to cope with it. Yeah.
But you would say, like, the potential definitely is there, as you described, like, when we are putting, like, two experts, like an AI expert system and a human expert together with the human in charge, then the potential is there that life will be safer.
Absolutely. And the numbers are proposals of it. I brought you one number that 8 years ago, AI for diagnosis and radiology is about the bottom 10% of the worst radiologists. And 4 years later, these AI systems for diagnosis and radiology, they surpassed the best AI doctors. And there are many examples. Of course, diagnosis process is not only one task, there are several tasks. But for this specific task to decide, is this a brain tumor or not? There, the AI surpassed the doctors, and this is something you have to keep in mind. And this, if this by 20% or something like this, and this is already 4 years ago, so this is an innovation which we can't risk to neglect or to oversee, and that's why we have to be heavy promoters of this AI system. I think we in Europe we have the regulation. We are one of the first movers. What is not only GDPR but also the AI Act. But it's all this regulation. We start to forget how huge the potential is, and we need also facilitate more the people, the companies, the users to use more of these tools. Besides the AI regulation, yeah.
I think these are perfect final remarks by you. So we should all already go, like, with the right ethical mindset towards AI and try to use it, because there's so much potential there. Thank you very much for being in this very exciting and entertaining episode, Ilya. I think we could have talked for another hour or so, but I think there will be the chance. And yeah. Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure.